May 31st, 2015. Maestro Christoph Eschenbach was presented with the Ernst von Siemens Music Prize for a life in the service of music. Just prior to that prestigious and much-deserved accolade, Maestro Eschenbach turned 75 and decided it was time to step down from his post as music director of the National Symphony Orchestra in Washington at the end of next season, saying, after 30 years of leading orchestras, it's time for a break. In May of 2008, Maestro Eschenbach was preparing his last concerts as music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra. At that time, Jill Pasternak had the opportunity to speak with the maestro, and we encore that conversation today.
Our guest today is Maestro Christoph Eschenbach, highly acclaimed piano virtuoso and conductor. His distinguished accomplishments are numerous: winner of various piano competitions, a graduate of gymnasium, studies with Herbert von Karajan and George Sell, and critically acclaimed music directorships of the State Philharmonic Rhineland-Pfalz, the London Philharmonic, the Tonhalle in Zurich, the Houston Symphony in Texas, the Ravinia Festival, the NDR Symphony Orchestra of Hamburg, the Vienna Philharmonic, the Orchestra of Paris, and the Philadelphia Orchestra. He is also the recipient of the 2003 French Legion of Honor. Although Maestro Eschenbach is stepping down from his post as music director of the Philadelphia Orchestra, his future plans include a very busy guest conducting and performance schedule. We spoke with Maestro Eschenbach at his quarters at the Kimmel Center.
You had quoted Mahler, a wonderful thing. You said, tradition is not preserving the ashes, but carrying the torch of fire. I thought that was a wonderful thing. Are you carrying the torch of fire for Mahler?
I guess so. Yes, I do. Not only for Mahler. It's really an attitude which I have towards music in general. And as Mahler has said, it's of course, I took this word especially also because I love his music.
Yes. And you do it so wonderfully. I have to tell you, I heard you conduct, I think it was the third symphony, and I am a musician and I've played a lot. And I was in tears at the end.
Yeah, the third is also one. I cannot say which is my favorite.
It was just marvelous.
But this is also one of the greatest. Yeah.
Yes, he was not played for many, many years in Europe.
Yeah.
Because of what was going on.
Yeah, terrible, yeah.
You were quoted as saying music saved your life.
Yes, it did.
In what way?
Well, I had a very difficult childhood, and I was so full of terrible impressions that somehow I looked for a medium to express myself and to let out, and this was music.
How did you find that?
Well, through my stepmother, my foster mother, who was a musician, who played the piano and taught the piano and taught singing. And when I was five, 6 years old, very sick for a year, I heard her every night playing, and I was so fascinated that I said that I want to play music, and I want to play piano, and I want to make music, and that's my life. I decided that's my life.
That's very young, but of course, what a decision to make. Mm. You've been very candid about your childhood and, of course, the trauma that you went through. But you were a pianist. That's actually what happened. I mean, you became a pianist.
I became a pianist, yes. Through the chamber music circles, which my foster parents had in their house three times a week, I was suddenly aware that music is not a mono thing, but it speaks to others and with others together. And so I soon played the violin also, the viola. I played in quartets and found out that the first step would be an orchestra. Then I started conducting when I was 19 and made my examen in conducting. And so I'm not a newcomer to conducting, so, like many instrumentalists.
Well, no, I was going to ask you that, because one thinks of you really first and foremost as a pianist to begin with, but then what caused you to change, or what calling did you get, I mean, in terms of conducting? Was this something that you felt that you wanted to have a larger picture of what was going on?
That's true. But the first impression which I got about conducting was when I was 11 and heard Furtwängler. Mm-hmm. It was the Berlin Philharmonic. And I was so overwhelmed how a man can make musicians play like angels and devils in the same time. And
well, man has a way of doing that.
Yeah. And so my foster mother saw that, and a week later I had a violin and violin lessons, because she said, if you want to be a conductor, you have to know a bit more about orchestra instruments. And so what interested me then when I studied conducting was the fact that I can communicate music to others and with others. And the fact that the combination of a big group of people and a conductor building the focus of the music making of these people is a very, very interesting task. And it's written so much literature for orchestra, and so much great literature, that I wanted to explore that together together with musicians.
And to make more music, I guess. What are the challenges when you step up in front of an orchestra? I mean, what do you consider the greatest challenge of communicating with an orchestra? I've always wondered about that. It's very daunting, I would imagine, for a conductor.
Well, I mean, you have to have a conception of the piece. You have to have a way, your own very certain way of interpretation, which you bring to the orchestra, and you have to convince the orchestra to go with you and to go with that, those ideas which you found in the piece by analysis and by learning it and by learning it upside down. The challenge is that the musicians indeed will share that and want to share that, and you have to make them want to share that. Otherwise, you don't get the result and a good performance. But that with an orchestra which you don't know, or which orchestra which don't know you,
right?
That is determined maybe in the first 10 minutes if it works or not. With an orchestra which you know like this, it's a given that it works. So, and then the work begins to be explorative on both sides. Mm-hmm. And also I like very much if the orchestra is not a gray mass which you tell, or to which you tell something and they do it, but that also musically they utter their opinions, and my musical conceptions of pieces are always in able to build in the opinion maybe of an oboist or a flutist.
Yes.
Or another soloist in the orchestra of what they give me in terms of phrasing or in terms of shaping. Mm-hmm. And so there's also a musical conversation without words, I would
Yes.
say. And that is a very, very interesting thing about it.
And there's a mutual respect, I think,
absolutely,
certainly.
Yeah.
What is the role of the conductor in the orchestra in terms of bringing to the world, to the audience, music of a certain type, say contemporary music? Is it the role to educate the audience, or is it the role, I mean, to bring new ideas to an audience? This always seems to be this discussion nowadays about repertoire. and too much contemporary, not enough contemporary, too difficult for the audience to absorb. What is the role, really? Is that part of it? Do you have to educate your audience? Is that a demand that should be followed?
I wouldn't say really educate. I mean, education would go into analysis of the pieces and into lectures about the pieces.
But I mean on a superficial level, in terms of the audience comes in and here you're playing a piece of music. I mean, you shouldn't have to talk to them about it before, but is that the place? Is that what should go on in the concert hall?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes?
I think so. And it can go on in a positive way. We have seen it here in my years, which I've worked with the orchestra, and I brought very much new music.
Yes, I know you have.
The orchestra itself was very open, is very open to it, very open, and they involve visibly in what they play as new music, and that jumps over there to the orchestra to the audience, that fire which they create, and the conviction which they have together with me. And so that makes the audience open for new music. Of course, there are always some people who don't like the piece, but there are also some people who don't like Tchaikovsky or so.
But at least it's tonal. I mean, this is a whole other concept now when you're going into...
Well, I don't make the difference between tonal and atonal. A tone is a tone, you know, and how you put them together is the work of the composer. If it comes out that it's not tonal in a traditional way, then and it's very well done and very full of emotions, like the music of Schönberg or Webern. Mm-hmm. Then it's great music, and I don't make the difference between Tchaikovsky and Webern. And they are great composers, and tonal or not tonal is for me not a question.
I guess what I meant, a tonality that they recognize, I think, because when people are confronted, especially people that are not educated in music, there is this, the reaction. There's shock, of course, and then there's, well, that this isn't so bad. You know, I mean, I could live with this. But, of course, this seems to be a discussion that's going on because orchestras are having problems with getting audiences. That's well known now. And it's not the same world that we had years ago. I mean, it's a different world. Certainly, yep. The audience makeup has changed as well.
Yeah, but we should fight against that because we should keep the audience curious. Mm-hmm. And not a routine listener who sits back in his chair and says, "Oh, that melody, I know, now I'm happy." that is not the attitude of neither us nor the composers, never was. Imagine Beethoven and the first performance of his Fifth Symphony or Ninth, it must have shocked the people and has shocked the people. And if one would have said before, "Oh, better we don't perform this piece because it could shock the people," then we wouldn't have Beethoven.
Of course, you know? Absolutely. Well, isn't that art, the progress of art?
Absolutely.
I mean, all kinds
absolutely.
Of art.
A product of the Nazi persecution, Christoph Eschenbach's early childhood was marred by disease and loss of family. Orphaned and in a refugee camp in East Germany until 1946, he was liberated by a maternal cousin, a pianist, singer, and music teacher who would become his foster mother. After a year of convalescence, he regained his ability to speak with the word yes when asked if he wanted to play the piano. And thus his spiritual journey and the rehabilitation of his mind and soul began. Music indeed saved his life. A Czech composer, Bohuslav Martinů, who fled to the United States, wrote the following work as a memorial to the little Czech town of Lidice, which in 1942 was deliberately obliterated in a few hours along with its inhabitants by the Nazis. Christoph Eschenbach conducts the Philadelphia Orchestra in this work. Christoph Eschenbach has conducted the Philadelphia Orchestra in Memorial to Literature by Bohuslav Martinu.
You, when do you find time to practice the piano? Because you certainly are performing tomorrow with a chamber group. And
even
also
today,
the
tonight is an apostolate. We play, after the Schubert symphonies, we play the Schubert Trout Quintet.
Oh, how wonderful, yeah.
With the musicians of the orchestra.
Cool.
And then tomorrow, a bigger concert with chamber music of all kind.
And you're going to do the Kindersainen, aren't you, on the final concert?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that one. That's
I was
a beauty.
Asked to do that. That was not my idea, but...
Why? Do you
because
not
I
like
didn't
it?
Want to play solo. There we are.
Oh, it's a burden, of
yeah.
course. There's
but
so much to do.
As it is a short piece, I will do it.
And a favorite, I think. Favorite.
I know, I love it, of course.
Yes. So what do you think are the biggest challenges of orchestras today? What is the challenge that stands before us?
The challenge is to work against routine in performance, in rehearsal. That means also a wonderful orchestra like this, the more it works well, the better it sounds. And in being convincing to an audience. These are the challenges which every orchestra should go through and work on.
What is working well?
Everything works well which is well done.
Is it communicating with each other or is it performing a certain...
All together. It's the communicating with each other, the musicians amongst themselves. One has to avoid that there's war in the orchestra. Within the musician, one has to avoid that there's war between the musicians and the conductor. One has to provide the good soil of harmony, which makes it able only to create. And then we create something very positive and convincing for the audience. And the audience is the next part in the game who comes versus the orchestra with its acclaim. So it's a whole circle of harmony coming together to make something special.
So this is the answer to the whole world situation that we have here. Harmony and understanding and respect.
Yes.
And listening, I guess.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I preach is the wrong word, but in my final speeches with my youth orchestra, I have an international youth orchestra in the summer in Schleswig-Holstein. They are marvelous, by the way. Youngsters from between 15 and 24 are from 30 nations. And when I leave them, I always say to them, fight against routine. Bring curiosity to yourselves and then to the orchestras which you will join. And also make friends between each other. It's a wonderful atmosphere there. You know, there are Israelis playing with Arabs mm-hmm. on one stand, and there are Scots playing with Chinese on one stand. And, I mean, and they form a really, during the 7 weeks, they form a family. And that's avoiding hostility, and it's avoiding the contrary of harmony, and it's creating peace. And that's the message which they bring to the world. And they can do it very easily because music knows no barriers.
That's
so
right.
It's a language which
a universal
talks to everybody.
Language, yes.
Absolutely.
And the exuberance of youth and hope.
Exactly.
Of course.
And now the Andante Moderato, the third movement of the Symphony No. 6 in A minor by Gustav Mahler. Christoph Eschenbach conducts the Philadelphia Orchestra in this recording. We just heard the Andante Moderato, the third movement of the Symphony No. 6 in A minor by Gustav Mahler. Christoph Eschenbach conducted the Philadelphia Orchestra in this recording.
You love Mahler.
Well, there was a conductor who said that about himself, and who was also a great Mahlerian. That was Bernstein.
Yes.
I wouldn't go so far to... so bold in saying that, but I think I understand this music from I don't know which side in me, but from some side which goes profounder than maybe others.
I think so, because you feel that in you. I mean, Mahler is a discovery also for, I think, people. Some people dismiss it right away. They dismiss him right away. Those are not people that really understand, but I think you definitely have, you bring out something very, very deep. Certainly that is very effective and passionate and real. It's almost as though you're there, you have experienced this, and I think maybe that's what comes through.
Probably yes.
Yes. Yeah. Did you have difficulty coming to terms with the situation in Europe, in your life?
Oh, when I was young, you
yes.
Oh yes, of course. Of course. And what you said first, one of the horrible things is that Mahler was damned from the program. And I mean, we heard the first Mahler performances not earlier than the 60s. I knew recordings in the 50s when I studied. I tried to get all this Klemperer and Bruno Walter, and Bernstein just began to record them. And so we had a difficult time to, and that is due to this monster who banned that and killed 6 million people. I mean, I don't want to get into this. I get too emotional with that.
Of course, and of course, at this particular time of year, we are very aware, and it will never be, never. You can't change, and how does one come to terms with that, if at all?
Yeah, one doesn't.
You move on.
I must say I must say, the new Germany now is quite a good country. It's quite in a good place because people don't forget and won't forget, and give it to the younger generation, the generations, to warn them. Of course, there are always this kind of
unfortunately, that's never going to go away.
Unpleasant neo-Nazi things, mm-hmm. but they are not so numerous, and the general feeling is that of guilt and remorse. I mean, and that is a good sign, I think.
And you are moving on and upward, and you are going to be going on tour with the orchestra now.
Yeah.
And then again in 2009, is that right?
2009.
What do you call home? Where do you live?
Well, I live in myself.
You're a citizen of the world, is that right?
Yes, and my home is my heart. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you've gotten into our hearts, too.
Thank you. So.
For a second listen to selected crossover interviews, visit www.wrti.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated, www.gmgi.org. Thanks for listening.